Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham, both pastors of Christ Church Haywards Heath. This week on Ordinary, we have a few final thoughts on hell, running on from last week's podcast. If you haven't listened to that one, you should go back and listen before you listen to this one, because we're going to get onto the topic of heaven. Just as with hell, there seem to be lots of misunderstandings and strange assumptions floating out there about what heaven means and what it's going to be like. Will it be a continuous church service? Will we be wearing white? Will we be sitting on clouds eating as much chocolate as we want without getting fat? Today we strip things back to what the Bible tells us heaven will be like. Enjoy the episode and I'll catch you on the other side.
My name is Graham Nichols.
I am Mark Bentham.
And my name is Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. Welcome back to the podcast. We are going to attempt to finish our kind of discussion on hell that we had last week on the podcast, because we feel there's some things still left unsaid. It's a huge topic to talk about. And then we're going to go on to talk about heaven and kind of maybe some misconceptions about what heaven looks like and means and what it will be like and how we can redress those with you know, a biblical notion of heaven, understanding what we do know and what we don't know about it. Do you want to start off Graham, with thoughts from last week's podcast?
Yeah, I think that last time we kind of ranged around some of the objections to hell and just got a little bit towards the end into more the biblical view. I suppose just to finish that off with nice, neat kind of wrapping is to say on the biblical teaching argument, I think from the some text I was saying just at the end, but Jesus talks about eternal punishment in parallel with eternal life. So I think the argument for annihilationism doesn't really hold water. And I think on the justice argument, there's the point about that you made last time about the fact that people choose to reject God and God gives them what they choose. That's what hell is. I think there's another argument to do with the fact that they continue in their rebellion against God in hell. So there's almost a continuation of judgment based on behavior. I think there's a third point, which is understanding the severity, the infinite value, in a sense, of rejecting God. Mm. And the right of God to say that has an eternal consequence. So it's both God's right, but it's also, if you think of any offence, you know, murdering someone gets a life sentence. You know, what does wanting to murder God get you? And it's sort of trading up for that to say, I'm not sure you could put a boundary on it to say, well, that's worth 1,000 years rejecting God. I think there's a degree of sort of proportionality that says, well, what's the proportion of the guilt of the offence? I think it's partly why an infinite Christ is the only one who can absorb the wrath of God. But that's another point altogether, that sort of infinite capacity that he has as God to absorb wrath. So I think those things are just worth kind of finishing off with. Jesus, as we said before, talks a lot about hell. And just to throw in a real, I don't know, brain stretcher, there is the idea of degrees of punishment in hell, though, which seems to be there in the parables hinted at.
Luke 10, yeah. The hints. They are hints.
Yeah.
But I think that would fit with the justice of God. Yeah. You know, because however you look at, you know, and the reality is fundamentally all have sinned, fall short of the glory of God, fact. But of course, within that, there are degrees. There is Hitler and there is, you know, my kind neighbour down the road. You know, they have not sinned to the same degree. And I think you have to recognise that. And I think therefore somehow there is, I think, I won't, you know, go to the wall for this, but I think there are degrees therefore of punishment. It would seem to fit with the justice of God, just as there are, and I think that then parallels, which I can be more certain of, degrees of reward within heaven, that you can, so I think those things parallel.
Okay.
And I think that's where that's where you really end up. You have eternity, both parallel degrees of reward, degrees of punishment.
I suppose one other thing that we might want to say is just a degree of humility to say the we understand the big headline, which is, it's really clear in Revelation, there's this thing called the lake of fire, there's the eternal destruction and to some degree torment of Satan and all those who oppose God. Mm-hmm. That's really clear and sort of big outline. There are bits where we might want to say, oh, I'm not sure about this, quite what happens here, and what does degree of punishment mean, and what does torment actually mean? Is it just the separation from God? Is there sort of active punishment? There's lots of things we don't know, and we just have to be humble about it.
Okay.
But I think the big headline is there is something, which is eternal punishment, mm-hmm. and it's pretty clear from the whole way the Bible is set up, and especially the New Testament gospel, that you want to avoid it.
Sure.
And so we want to talk about it just to outline this is something that you desperately want to avoid because it's awful. And you've got to have that.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. No, I think just in all of that humility means, not just kind of humility in terms of what my understanding can be, but I think it goes back to what I was saying in the last podcast, that lots of the reasons people have a wrong view of this is because they have a distorted or a distrust of who God is. So at the end of the day, this comes down to, look, if God's word teaches this, and I don't fully understand it, but do I trust him and who he is and what he has revealed about himself, that I am going to trust that actually this will be just, this will be fair, and this will be the most loving thing that he can do in terms of his creation. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that because we go from our perspective, that just looks wrong. I can't get that. That's terrible. Whereas actually, when you look at it from a perspective of God and the horrificness of sin, and you see the nature of the horrificness of it because of the cost, Christ, you then are left with a position of going, actually, in humility, I'm going to trust that actually God does know what he's doing. And I trust that actually his purposes are good. And that's in all of these discussions where I can't factually know mm-hmm. everything or the scriptures aren't as clear, you end up in a position of trusting the character of who God is. Mm-hmm. And the character of God is plentifully revealed throughout scripture.
Yeah.
And that's where you end up in the baseline.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it's sad when people reject Christianity or move away because of doctrines, because actually what they're actually rejecting is who God is and his character and a misunderstanding of that.
And I guess to finally wrap up then this little section on hell, can we spend a couple of minutes just reflecting on The Great Divorce, which is C.S. Lewis's big work on, or big artistic description of what hell could look like? Because I think it's helpful. It's certainly been helpful for me in reimagining what separation really means and what punishment could look like, taking away from that medieval torture picture into something slightly different. And in that book, Lewis paints this picture of, and Mark will help me here because he's read it as well, of a grey, mundane, plain world universe in which people are living unsatisfied but unwilling to yield to God even then.
And continually move further and further into the grey world.
Into that greyness. And it's dull and it's boring and it's nothingness.
Mundane.
And yet they still live there and choose to exist there. And even when given an opportunity, which I don't think Lewis is making a theological point, but given an opportunity to move towards heaven, they choose not to on the basis of they know what they know and they'd rather stick with that. And when they go to that more heavenly realm to see it, which they do on a bus in this story, it's a world that is so real that even the blades of grass will cut into your feet because it's so real, the reality.
And they're not real. You know, and they've lost that realness.
They're like shadows, ghosts.
Yes, shadows. That's exactly how he puts it, isn't it? Shadows, because he's trying to make this point of actually the rejection of hell is this sense of a loss of who we truly are in one sense.
Yes, it's a it's a loss of an element of humanity.
Yeah.
It's to leave God is a loss of a part of your humanity. And so I think that's helpful. It's maybe something you could get your hands on and read. It's, you know, not, you know, it's not the Bible and it's, you know, it's art.
Well, but what C.S. Lewis is always brilliant for is helping me to see things and to feel things in different ways. Mm. So you might not always agree with his theology, and you might not, and I don't think at times, as you say, he's not trying to make the point of there is a second chance.
No.
He's just kind of taking it for a ride, as it were, literally, to kind of try, well, actually, even if they were faced with it, they still would choose not to. He's just trying to help us make the point. Mm-hmm. So
that might be useful for people.
Yeah, good book. And the idea of marriage and divorce is a good old biblical idea. It's right through the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
and it's not that big a book. No, you can listen to Audible in 4 hours, I think it is.
That's right. Okay, that's great. So please feel free, people, to email in questions about that. There'll be questions, I'm sure. But let's move on to talk a bit about heaven. So I think there's probably equally misconceptions or in the way that people think about heaven or what that's going to mean or what that's going to look like on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
So could we have just an outline, like we did at the beginning of the Hell episode, on what we know about heaven, perhaps what we don't know about heaven?
Yeah, I think it's worth saying that hell, in the way we defined it, is actually the context for heaven. And the fact that both all of the souls who've rebelled against God and the devil and all his demons are thrown into the lake of fire is actually the context for heaven, where all those things are removed. So actually it's a very positive thing that helps us understand what heaven is, because in a sense, like hell is the absence of God, heaven is the presence of God, but the absence of everything that spoils.
Mm.
So hell is part of our security in a way that it's actually been dealt with and we're no longer encroached. Mm-hmm. So if you think about the Garden of Eden, it's sometimes Jesus does use the word paradise. You know, today you will be with me in paradise. But he's not thinking of precisely a return to Eden, because in Eden, you still got the serpent.
Mm-hmm.
So in the new heavens and new earth, you haven't got the serpent who's going to come and tempt.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a bit of a contexting point.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's the really fundamental misconception, which I'm sure people listening wouldn't have, which is the harps, angels,
clouds.
Yeah, which I think probably is also a medieval idea. Mm-hmm, yeah. Just kind of parallel the hell ones.
Yes.
But probably no one listening to that wants to play the harp or mm-hmm. wants to float around on a cloud.
They might want to play the harp.
Well, they might want to play the harp and many other instruments. And we're not saying there's not harps or other instruments
in heaven.
Probably not pets.
I think it's worth...
Don't
go to the pets thing. Let's not go there yet.
But if it's not that kind of floating on clouds, an eternal church service vibe, which yes. I wouldn't be that excited about. Sorry, guys. What is it?
Sorry, we're not preaching, so you're all right.
Let's just clear up something else as well, because okay. There is the current heavens and there are the new heavens.
Mm-hmm.
And our eternal dwelling place is in the new earth and the new heavens, Revelation 21:22.
Because, can I just ask a question, jump in there? In that sentence, is heavens... It can mean two things in the Bible.
Yeah.
One, the sky,
mm.
and secondly... a geographical place that is paradise. So when we're talking about a new heavens and a new earth, are we not simply talking about a new creation?
I think we're talking about a renewed creation.
Yes.
But that's why I think the distinction. Heaven is where God dwells, and there are currently the old heavens.
Okay.
So when we die as believers right now, we awake in the presence of God, of Christ, our Saviour, and dwell with him in those heavens. When judgment comes, we will be with him on those days. The old heavens and the earth mm-hmm. will be burnt up, and the new heavens and the new earth mm-hmm. will be there. And they'll talks in language of Jerusalem coming down. And I think that's where this is the renewed idea of this creation, renewed, made perfect, better, the old, everything that's rubbish, corrupt, wicked will be burnt away, and you're left with the new. And I think there will be imagery of the sense of recognizable, as in there will be parallels. We'll still recognize
trees,
yeah, but also places. You know, okay. I don't think it will be completely without some resemblance. But I think
where are you getting that from?
Well, I think the Revelation 21:22 picture is the language.
He was about to say his apocryphal.
My apocryphal.
Right, gospel. Well, the book defend, of Mark. Defend that.
Well, I think the language in Revelation 21, when it talks about new, is actually the word renewed. So it's not a sense of brand new, no parallel. I think the picture of God and the pattern is always one of trajectory throughout the scriptures, where he is renewing what went wrong in Eden. So part of the problem with Eden is the serpent imagery that is then being renewed and into language of city. So it's not a complete breakaway. It's always in the Bible the language of renewed and being made better.
And I think in the however you take precisely what it means, the idea of the tree of life being there, it's not just in Revelation, it's in Ezekiel and I think Daniel as well.
Yeah.
and the kind of the stream flowing through the city. So even if it's slightly analogous language, there seems to be the idea of substance. And if you have a resurrection body, you've got to place your feet somewhere. So the sense that there are similar things to what there are here. You know, in the parable of the talents, the guys are put in charge of cities. So again, it might be analogous language, but they're obviously in charge of something and something that has substance. Mm-hmm. So there must be stuff you can touch and handle and see, it would seem. There's obviously something materially different because it says about the not need for a sun and so forth. So maybe, which is a fascinating thought, maybe the whole solar system, you know, gets collapsed into this one place. Because there's no need for the sun and stars and moon to kind of light the world anymore because materially something has changed in terms of light and the property of light. So there's some degree of discontinuity. It's a fascinating thought, which is, I don't have a strong view about there not being any life anywhere on Earth, but I think it's reasonably biblical to say, actually, the whole universe is made to display the glory of God to us living on Earth. It's not a big project.
I don't think it's reasonably biblical. I think it is biblical.
What I mean is reasonably biblical to then go on from that to say, I think there probably isn't life on other planets, life across the universe. God is probably not doing some parallel thing in other star
I
systems.
Agree with that.
I
think we're straying into what we may or may not.
No, I just got a bit carried away. No,
and I love it.
But it was more to do with the point of the property of light. It's particularly mentioned in Revelation. So it means something. You know, whether all physical properties are slightly changed, I don't know. But
something that I'm sort of hearing from you across this and the last podcast is that we have to be so careful when we read imagery and metaphor that we don't then transfer that into facts into our brain. Like, this will be like this.
Yes.
That we have to have a degree of humility in our understanding and just say it's something like this, but, you know, we don't know and we don't need to be dogmatic about it.
Yeah,
that's true. But I think I want to put a word of caution on that, because I think that can, of course, the Bible uses metaphor to help me feel the concreteness sometimes, to really grasp it, to be able to see it and to understand it. So although you don't want to become literal, like the metaphor is, it is like, you know, that's the purpose of a metaphor. It is to help you feel it in a way that you see it in a way that you don't if it was just told, because the Bible wants us to be excited about heaven.
And also, doesn't it have to be said in a way that transcends time?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, another thing to do with Genesis, about the way that Genesis is written, is that, you know, God had to write a story that would read 2,000 years ago and read today.
Sure.
And so it's, of course, going to be metaphorical a lot of the time, because that... It has to.
Well, that's a discussion for another day, though, where Genesis 1 and 2 is metaphorical.
Genesis, perhaps. Yes, but okay. I have another question, unless you want to carry on.
Well, no, I just want to make sure that we're being clear on heaven, you know, in terms of the distinction, old heavens, new heavens. Mm-hmm. We got that distinction. We go straight to be with Christ. We don't think of soul sleep. We mentioned that in the last podcast. But that is a view that would be held by Jehovah's Witnesses. That would be Seventh-day Adventists. There would be some probably within the life of the church who would hold to that view. And I just don't think you see that in the Bible. And actually, I think it robs the great joy. One of the joys of doing Christian funerals is actually you're able to say there, you know, I am the resurrection and the life, says Jesus. And that means right now I know that that person who we are burying, actually their body may be there, but they are with Christ. And we say that with certainty. And Paul says, 1,000, you know, we grieve as those with hope. And the hope is not of someday future, but of the reality now that we are with Christ. And I think that if we don't hold to that, we rob something of the Christian. And I think we see that clearly with Jesus on the cross with a thief. He says, today you'll be with me in paradise. So, and that gives you a clue of what heaven's like. A, it is being with Christ. That's the fundamental joy of heaven. It's seeing Christ, it's being with Christ, it's delighting in Christ, it's praising Christ. It's doing all of life for the glory of Christ. And in his presence in a way that we just don't fully experience now.
So, and why isn't it like a perpetual church meeting then?
Because
or maybe it is.
Well, no. Well, again, because I think this is where what you were talking about earlier, the continuity, discontinuity. The continuity you see of how God originates creation is for us to work and serve and delight in and find joy in, which means that if that is his original creation, I don't think he changes his purposes fundamentally. So there's going to be discontinuity because it's going to be better, but there's going to be continuity in the sense of actually how we glorify God is not just by sitting there singing, which I think we will. I think there will be times where we're just before the throne beholding the wonder of who Christ is, and our hearts will be thrilled by that. But actually it will be revealed in the sense of delighting in relationships in a way that we can't now, delighting in work in a way that we don't now. I mean, the problem Graham and I have is that we're out of work.
That's true.
Do you know what I mean? Like, gardeners, you've got a great job, you know, and other jobs. But Graham and I, we're slightly out of work. We're going to have to find something new to do.
Start reskilling now.
We're going to have to start reskilling in some way.
Play the piano and the guitar a bit better, though.
Nice. Yeah, that'd be good. You can just be in the band.
So you can go and join Line of Judah.
No, that would be in hell, I think. I'm not allowed to join Line of Judah.
No, no, you're not saying Line of Judah. It will be in hell. No, exactly. Let's clarify that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's not saying like that. No,
I'm not saying you'll really be in hell. I'm just saying it would be hell for you.
It would be a hell like experience for you. Yeah.
Okay. Just to be totally clear.
That.
It would be hell for my son who's in the band, anyway. what was your question going
to
be?
Well, I've got a couple of ideas here to talk about. Platonism, because I feel that this idea of soul and body being separate and separated at death is an interesting idea that perhaps we need to talk about, because it's often what is being preached against. And a book like that we've talked about, like Love Thy Body, is saying actually no, the body does matter. It does matter what you do with your body. There's not a body soul split, and when you go to heaven, your body's nothing anymore, and it's just you as a soul. Can we talk about that? Is that useful to talk about?
Yeah, I think it is actually. Okay. You've already said it though. Bodies do matter. And so the whole kind of respect for the body thing, I think, is important as well. And we don't have the Platonist idea of sort of spirit good, body bad. So everything material is basically bad and corrupted. And so we sort of focus on just the spirit. So I think although we recognize we're living in a sinful world, we respect the body. We kind of enjoy the body. We enjoy food. We enjoy good things that God's given us. And that's part of a sort of bodily experience. And we don't say, oh, well, that's just kind of temporary and material and there's nothing good about it, because it'll be, you know, much better in heaven. We'll just be sort of souls there.
Yes.
Actually, every time we enjoy something good, you know, musically, digestively, we're saying, well, that's going to be even better in heaven because it won't be spoiled by sin.
Okay.
You know, I don't think we can have selfish ideas like, I can eat a whole packet of Celebrations and not get fat. Sometimes people say that, you know, that it'll be sort of everything unhindered. You know,
why would you say that? Why would you say that's not possible?
Nothing will spoil. So I don't know precisely how it all will work, but the things that spoil those experiences by their temporariness or by the fact they're snatched away very quickly, or that they're never quite as good, you know, the second cup of tea was never quite as good as the first cup of tea, you know, that you wanted it to be. So those somehow are taken away. Quite how that scales up, I don't know. But it means that the physical is important now, and taking care of the body is important.
But let's just
now
clarify on that, is that what you're talking about then is the body in the new heavens.
Yes.
There's a question of what happens now. And I think in terms of, there are two One is...
When people die, you mean?
So when people die now,
what happens to the body?
Before the final judgment.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Now, what I think you see is what happens on the cross and the resurrection. So what you see there is Jesus on Friday, his soul goes to be with his Father in heaven. Mm-hmm. And on the Sunday morning, his body is risen and raised. Mm-hmm. And I think what you see there is the parallel of the Christian experience, that we are in that kind of, as we die now, in that Friday night experience, awaiting for that resurrection Sunday, which is the final day of judgment. Mm-hmm. Now that then raises questions for, you know, do we then get temporary bodies while we await for our new bodies? Mm-hmm. And there would be those who would argue, yes. Then there are others who would say, well, no, we're just at this point with Christ.
Unembodied soul.
Possibly. My personal hunch is that there's probably a temporary body. Okay. But again, there's obviously a distinction. You know, Revelation 6 talks about the saints under the altar who have been persecuted. There's clearly people who are known and established. And you know, there's not going to be a sense of you're just a floating ghost in any way, shape, or form. There's going to be a reality, a temporal. So it doesn't pose a big problem for me.
Yeah.
But I think you've got to hold that tension of, the, you know, the Bible speaks about our bodies being raised on that day, 1 Corinthians 15, you know, 1 Thessalonians 4, when Christ comes again. Mm. That's when we get those resurrected bodies. Mm. So what happens in the meantime? Does my old earthly body just become my temporary body in heaven? Probably.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful. And you preempted one of my questions there, so that's useful. I wanted to maybe talk about the emotional experience of heaven then quickly, because we talked about the physical, what it might look like, bodies, places, actual objects, similarities to the creation now. What about, I've heard people say sometimes, how could heaven be a happy place if we know and have loved ones who are not there? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. It's a question the Bible doesn't, in a sense, answer, but in a way it does. I think there's a couple of things to say, and Mark maybe to expand on them or sort of add to them. There's the fact that I think we're going to be caught up with the experience of being with God and his people so much, in such an overwhelming sense, that I think that will overwhelm any sense of sadness about any loss. So I think that's point number one. But I think connected with that is that if you so loved God and his justice and his holiness, you would, and it's kind of awkward to say it, but I think you've got to say it, you would rejoice in his justice and judgment. It's what we get in the Psalms a little bit. You know, that sing unto the Lord a new song, it kind of ends with, and we rejoice because he's judging everybody, and everyone kind of, you know, if you sing versions of that, you kind
sing
of think,
that bit quietly.
Well, that's a bit awkward. I'm really happy that all these people are going to hell. But I think if you really line up with God's justice, you think this is a good thing.
And we're perfected.
Yes.
And I think you hold the tension, therefore, as God does, which is he is saddened and grieves at that, but at the same time
is upheld
like and the justice. So I think we're perfected in that sense. My emotions will be balanced in that way.
Yeah.
We haven't touched on it, but we talked in the about rewards.
Yeah.
It's about 2 minutes, if you want to.
Well, I think it's worth... Edwards is really helpful on this. So he talks about...
As in
now,
Jonathan Edwards,
Puritan, 1700s. And he talks about how actually even now, as we live the Christian life, particularly as we go through trials and difficulties, what happens is our kind of capacity for who God is stretched, a bit like a boat, for the sense. You get a bigger boat. And you might have huge trials and difficulties, but as you endure for Christ now, he says you will be rewarded and your boat is stretched. And when you get to heaven, he talks about how everyone's boat is of different sizes, depending on how we've lived the life now. But all of our boats will be filled. So all of us will be satisfied and delight in what we have been given and the rewards. We won't be envious because we'll be content. But some boats have been stretched bigger now and other boats haven't been stretched as big. So they don't have as much in their boat, as it were, the reward to a delight and joy thing. But I will be satisfied and content. And I think that's a helpful picture in terms of the emotion. There's not going to be envy or dissatisfaction. We'll all be content. But that does speak now of, you know, Paul talks, you know, running the race and not just kind of getting through the fires, but actually building well and delighting in heaven. So actually how we live now for Christ will matter, and whether we're stretching our boats through the trials that we endure now or through life now, and our joys in that.
Mm-hmm. Final thought, Graham?
No. I keep saying no, then I say something.
Just say yes.
I'm going to say yes. I want to be there. I remember one of my children's testimony was, I just preached on heaven, and they came up to me and said, I want to be there. And that was a great testimony. It wasn't so much, I don't want to be in hell. It was, I want to be there. So that's my final thought.
My final comment is there. Heaven by Randy Alcorn. It's a really helpful, really, you're not going to agree with everything, but really thought through book on the whole area of heaven will excite you about it and the realities and the realness of heaven. I think that's the exciting thing. If you want to think about heaven, think about this world perfected, and you'll begin to get there.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Ordinary. If you enjoyed it, why not leave a review and share the podcast with your family and friends? If you have questions following these two episodes we've done on heaven and hell, then do send them in ordinary@cch.org.uk. We'd love to talk to you. Join us again next time for a podcast all about spiritual gifts.